accounts of mock executions, constant beatings, and humiliating mistreatment. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for the first part, please. Middle East Eye wrote, Palestinian men kidnapped by Israeli regime forces since the start of the war in Gaza have told Middle East Eye how they were physically tortured with dogs and electricity, subjected to mock executions, and held in humiliating and degrading conditions. In testimonies to MEE, one man who was taken by Israeli regime forces from a school in Gaza, where he had sought refuge with his family, described how he had been handcuffed, blindfolded, and detained in a metal cage for 42 days. During interrogations, he said he had been given electric shocks as well as scratched and bitten by army dogs. Other men also described being electrocuted, attacked by dogs, doused with cold water, denied food and water, deprived of sleep, and subjected to constant loud music. One of the men, Muaz Mohammad Khamis Mehrdad, who was taken prisoner in Gaza City in December and held for more than 30 days, said, "They did not spare anyone. There were 40-year-old boys and 80-year-old men." As well as three men taken prisoner in Gaza, M.E. spoke to a man abducted in a raid in the West Bank city of Qalqilia, who said he had been blindfolded, stripped naked, and hung by his arms during interrogations in which he was repeatedly beaten and burnt with cigarettes. He also described being held for days in freezing conditions in which he was not allowed to sleep and of a troop urinating in a bottle and handing it to him after he had requested water. All four men described being forced to strip naked and being constantly beaten and abused by Israeli regime troops during their weeks-long detentions. MEE has also spoken to a number of other former detainees who also described similar experiences to those of the men in this story. Their accounts of torture and abuse follow similar allegations made by human rights monitors. The Zionist regime's conduct of its war against the resistance group Hamas in Gaza is already the subject of an International Court of Justice case in which it stands accused of genocide and ongoing war crimes investigation by the International Criminal Court. Last week, details of an unpublished investigation by UNRWA, the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees, alleging abuse of hundreds of Palestinian prisoners detained during the war in Gaza were reported by the New York Times. Many of those details appear consistent with the testimonies of former detainees who spoke to Middle East Eye. Recently, Haaretz reported that at least 27 detainees from Gaza had died in Israeli regime military facilities since the start of the war. It said some of the deaths had occurred at the Sedeh Tayman military base in southern Israel and Anatot base in the West Bank. Recently, Alice Jill Edwards, the UN's special rapporteur on torture, said she was investigating allegations of torture and mistreatment of Palestinian detainees by the Zionist regime and was in talks with the Israeli regime authorities to visit the country on a fact-finding mission. Rami Abdo, the chair of EuroMed Human Rights Monitor, which has also compiled reports of torture in custody, said the testimonies of Palestinians released from Israeli regime detention were deeply disturbing. Abdo told MEE, "These testimonies reveal a systematic pattern of abuse, including forced strip searches, harassment, threats of rape, severe beatings, dog attacks, and denial of necessities such as food, water, and access to restroom facilities. These acts not only inflict physical pain, but also leave lasting psychological scars on the victims. The use of such brutal tactics, particularly against vulnerable groups such as women, children, and the elderly, is reprehensible and constitutes a gross violation of human dignity and international law." Miriam Azem, an advocacy associate at Adala, a Palestinian human rights organization, said reports of pervasive torture and ill-treatment inflicted on Palestinian detainees in Israeli regime custody demanded an immediate international intervention. Azem told MEE, "Hundreds of Palestinians from Gaza remain held incommunicado, their whereabouts unknown. The urgency of the current moment demands not just attention, but immediate and resolute intervention from international community. Any failure to intervene poses a grave threat to Palestinian lives." The Zionist regime army had not responded to MEE's request for comment at the time of publication. It has said in response to allegations concerning the mistreatment of detainees that such conduct violates IDF values and contravenes IDF orders and is therefore absolutely prohibited. It has said its troops act in accordance with Israeli and international law in order to protect the rights of the detainees. It has said every death in Israeli regime custody is being investigated and that some of those who had died had pre-existing medical conditions or injuries, and this is what that they are actually lies.
Iranian Radio, Global Mission. This is IRIB English Radio.
I'm a teacher.
I'm a researcher.
I'm a mother.
I'm a lawyer.
And I believe in acting kindly toward you because you are
a Muslim lady.
You are very special. There's no one just like you. You are very special. And I'm so glad you're mine.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of Arab English Radio. Welcome back to a new episode of Muslim Ladies. Like always, we're here to talk about women's issue. And once more, I have the honor to be your host. Well, this is Asma, and here with me, I have Sister Rehane. Well, actually, she's going to introduce herself pretty much perfectly for you. Assalamu alaikum, sister, and welcome to Muslim Ladies.
Thank you very much, Sister Asma. I'm Rehane Paisapa, and I'm happy to be here with our dear listeners. I hope you have a wonderful day today.
Of course we would have. Since it's all ladies, then it's going to be wonderful. Well, just for the record, she is an Islamic researcher and she works on ladies' issues and whatever that matters to us as ladies generally. So, previously on Muslim Lady, I remember the last point you mentioned was so eye-catching, actually, and I'm still thinking about it, like, hijab is not just a material thing, like you wear hijab physically and then you let go of the other parts of your soul to just wander the way they like. It's not just a true sort of thinking, I suppose. Even in our religion, when they talk about hijab, they actually mean the both aspect, the physical and the metaphysical, like the part that is related to your eyes, to your ears, to your mouth. Everything must be covered and have a hijab.
All the aspects of hijab, of course, it's not just for women, the hijab. And we have other aspects like hijab of, like having hijab for your eyes, meaning that you mustn't look lustfully at the opposite gender. So this, of course, not only applies to women, but also applies to men. So,
and thank you for bringing that up. It's for men as well, because it's not just the appearance. It's about the way you think. I guess hijab is a lifestyle.
Yes, of course. Yes, obviously. So men must also refrain from leering at women, and women must avoid this as well. So looking at non-mahram men for women is okay to the extent that is just for having a conversation maybe in society. Like, you cannot go about in society just and avoid looking at men whatsoever. But the thing is that it has to have a boundary.
Your attitudes, actually.
Yes, like, yes, it's, you have to look with an innocence. Like, you mustn't look at someone lustfully. The moment you feel like you've started to feel things by looking at someone, yeah, you must lower your gaze immediately. So this is the hijab of your eyes. And it also applies to men, obviously, more,
exactly,
I think, than women.
Yeah, more
even.
And more.
And another part is hijab of your thoughts. So even you're not in the presence of another man, but maybe you start thinking about someone, you have to immediately stop yourself, distract yourself. And again, this applies to men as well, maybe even more so than women.
Yeah, the fact that this program is for Muslim ladies and we're addressing them does not mean that whatever we say is just for women. No, of course, Muslim men also have to actually follow these rules and think about them. At least, you know, I usually say that to know something and to do your best accordingly is one thing, and to know something and ignore it is another thing. So when I know something and I say, okay, I would try my best, even though sometimes I would fail, it's even, still it has got some values and worth in it. But for those people who know it and at the same time they ignore it or they say, I don't believe in it, that's a totally different story. So yes, hijab is very much important, not just physically. We have hijab of the soul, of the gaze, of the way you think, of the things you hear and the things you say. And we're talking about that, actually. So let's go for a short break and then we'll be back. Thank you for staying with us. Welcome back, dear ladies. You're listening to Muslim Lady, and we're talking about hijab, and Sister Rehane is in here to help us, actually. So we were talking about hijab not being the lady issues. It is an issue for every single member of the society because we're responsible toward each other, because it's not just that you cover up your beauties. It is also to cover up the doors that are open and not let the unwanted guests get into your brain and to your thinking and into your heart. You know, it's all about the stains. It's all about your heart not to get stained by a different sort of sicknesses and disgraceful colors of vice and things like that.
Another aspect of hijab that I wanted to touch upon is hijab of your manner. So the way that you behave in society and towards the opposite gender. First of all, I'm going to talk about, of course, the women's responsibility in this. Nowadays, we see in society, in media, that men and women can be friends, just friends. And can be nothing else underneath it. But that is the furthest thing from the truth. So
Since it was such a big lie, they're starting, like I'm seeing nowadays, there are some talk shows talking about the fact that people, like the ones who said it once, is starting to say, no, there is no such a thing to say that, okay, men and women can be friends. No, eventually one of them is going to get into the trap of more than friend.
Exactly. So it's men and women just cannot stay platonic friends. Even if it just starts out that way for a short while, it just cannot stay that way. Islam offers hijab of your behavior. So you have to behave in a way towards men where you don't unintentionally lead them on into thinking that you're like even just friends, like even being friends is will not have a good ending. The way that we behave towards men must be telling that I am not just being friendly with you because I like you. I'm just being normal. I'm just being polite because you're a person, you're a human being, and nothing more.
I'm just practicing humanity.
Exactly.
Manners.
Yes, you mustn't be friendlier than usual. Or maybe you're usually very friendly towards everyone, and you might find that you have to tone it down when you're interacting with another man.
Exactly. Because now that's very important. Because you see among even your friends and your classmates, sometimes you see that some people naturally are that warm and so sociable. But then when it comes to men, they do not know that the way they're behaving is actually telling other people more stuff than just being friend. Men would get some other stuff from the way they're treating them.
Yes, they assume that you're interested in them.
Exactly.
Men just think differently than women, generally.
So I usually say that to have borders in the way you treat other people, be it a man or a woman, that's a better way for you yourself. You know, it would save you all the problems that might come into you. It would help you yourself. So even if you are so friendly when you come into a new environment, when you meet new people, try not to give them these sort of green lights you don't wish to give. Because, you know, people have got different connotations from different stuff that you do. Maybe you do not have in mind to convey it in that way. Maybe you do not wish whatever you do or say, or even the choice of words. I sometimes notice the bare fact that maybe you have a special choice of word for your own self and you do not mean anything extra, but unfortunately some people would take it the other way. So you should be very careful. Actually, being an active member of society is not an easy thing. You have to watch every single thing you do.
Yes, so the way that you talk, like the way that you use some words, like maybe you are naturally a joking person.
Yeah.
So you have to be careful of that when you're interacting with people of the opposite gender.
Keep it for your friends.
Yes, the way that you laugh, like you might not even know it, but it might be alluring to the opposite gender.
Exactly.
And you just start laughing and...
You know nothing about it, actually. You have no intentions. But unfortunately, if history is any indication, if the other relationship of other people in this world have been any indication to you, then they do have an effect on other people, especially the other gender. So let's go for that break and then we'll come back with No Heartbreak.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Muslim Lady.
So, welcome back. This is the last part of today's episode. Still, I have to thank you for staying with us. I hope it has been fruitful for all of us. I mean, like Muslim ladies, we have to think about different stuff. And maybe whatever Sister Rehana mentioned in here are the stuff that I have long taken for granted and I have to think about them again and again. So these stuff are being added in here in order for us to rethink about them, to have a check upon those stuff, those points, and see how thoughtful and considered I am of some very little and delicate issues that I might not think as important.
Yeah, so up until now, we talked about different aspects of hijab. We talked about the fact that hijab is a necessity in society, and if you have chosen Islam as your religion, then Islam is something that you have accepted already. And it's just somehow a battle within yourself to try to observe the hijab more and more every day, like try to be better at observing it. So if you've accepted Islam, then that means you've accepted the hijab.
As a Muslim lady, I accepted Islam. Now I'm called a Muslim lady. I have to go for the details.
Exactly. And another point that we talked about is that hijab is, contrary to some belief, it's not just about the physical appearance. It's not just covering yourself, your body, your hair. It is also about your thoughts, observing
your
thoughts, manners, and the way you speak and the way you look at other people. And another thing that we talked about is that hijab is not just for Muslim ladies, even though usually that is what people talk about when it comes to hijab. Hijab is also for men, even in regards to their physical appearance.
Exactly.
Yes, but especially and more so when it comes to their gaze and their thoughts and maybe their manners as well.
And also we have it in the narration that your gaze is an arrow from the devil.
And finally, we talked about the fact that when it comes to hijab in your behavior, some people might not realize that they're not being very modest in their behavior. They're being friendly towards other men as they would to other women. So the best way to observe the hijab in that way is to avoid friendships with men altogether.
Maybe the things that you're doing or saying are not meant to be taken the other way as men usually take it. But have it in mind and do not call these things old-fashioned sort of thinking, because trust me, they still exist, and still all of these matters that we're concerned with are the old and archaic stuff that have been there since Adam and Eve. So do not take these things for granted and just think about them and see and evaluate your behavior the way you are actually claiming to be a modest, obedient. Try to just look at it again and again and see if it's really the way it must be or no. You have to rehash your old stories and watch your actions again and again. So, Muslim ladies, this was all for today. I hope you enjoyed it. Until another session, I bid you farewell. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I know I'm waiting, waiting for something, something to happen to me. This waiting comes with trust. trials and challenges. Nothing in life is free.
Food for thought.
Salam, everybody, and may God accept your fasts. Here is a saying from Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, to help us abstain from undesirable acts during blessed month of Ramadan that may nullify the fast. A fasting person is in a state of worship even when asleep in bed, except when backbiting a fellow Muslim.
This is IRIB English Radio. Iranian news. Iranian culture. Iranian voice. www.parstoday.com/en.
Welcome to Israel Watch. On this episode, we will focus on Netanyahu's threats to attack Rafah and the possibility of military action there regarding the political issues and the captives. This is while the occupation regime has announced the release of two captives in Rafah in a complex military operation. In addition, there are ongoing contacts to conclude an exchange deal, as well as protests and demands to overthrow Netanyahu's administration to hold early elections. Regarding these topics, I welcome the specialist in Israeli affairs, Professor Ali Haider. Welcome to Israel Watch, dear Professor. So, after the occupation army announced the release of two captives in Rafah during a complex military operation, as they put it, the Zionists began advertising that we can address the issue of the captives without negotiations. But this event will not have a major impact on this issue. The impact of the release of the two captives on the issue of the entire captives have laid the groundwork for those who oppose the captives exchange deal to take advantage of this event and escalate their opposition. Professor Ali Haider, how do you assess the release of the two captives in Rafah in a complex military operation that was prepared for a long time, knowing that the two captives were in the possession of a Palestinian family, not Hamas, according to Osama Hamdan, the former senior representative of Hamas in Lebanon?
In the name of God, the most gracious, the most merciful. In fact, Netanyahu needed such an achievement to justify his positions of refusing to submit to the demands of the Hamas movement in the negotiations in order to continue the genocide. However, the event, in its circumstances and the number of captives, does not change anything from the overall scene. Rather, we can say that it'll be just a passing event. For 2 or 3 days, the world will forget this achievement because 134 captives are still held by the Hamas movement. And therefore, Netanyahu is looking for such tactical events here and there in order to influence public opinion and create for himself a solid foundation to continue the war. This war, in addition to its strategic dimensions, also favors Netanyahu personally. He needs this war to stay in power.
طيب.
Professor Ali Haider, between the impact of the recent captives release operation and the captives exchange deal, how do you evaluate the Zionist approach regarding the captives?
There, the division still exists at the political level and at the popular level as well, to the point that for the first time in opinion polls, 51% of the Israeli population now supports an exchange deal, even if it comes at the expense of a ceasefire. This is a shift in public opinion that portends what Netanyahu fears. It heralds more transformations because protests are escalating among the families of the captives. All of this is due to the failure to achieve the goals declared so far, not only a failure with regard to eliminating the Hamas movement, which the United States has also begun to say is impossible, but also even at the level of liberating the captives. These could be serious achievements before the eyes of the public, but they have not happened so far.
Here it means that after more than 4 months, Netanyahu has been able to release only 2 captives, and his attempts have failed on previous occasions.
Yes, the 2 captives were not held by Hamas. There is news out there, but it needs to be verified. There are talks about a deal with those holding the captives and so on. These things are being said, but I want to emphasize that it is just a passing event whose impact is fleeting and does not change anything in the political scene. The problem is with Netanyahu. No matter how much he tries to find temporary solutions, the effects are not enough to bring stability for his administration.
Indeed, the protest against the way Netanyahu and members of his administration have dealt with the captives at the hands of the resistance in Gaza are escalating day after day. Demands have grown from an exchange deal to overthrowing Netanyahu's administration and holding early elections. Rarely does a session of the Zionist administration pass at the present time without disagreements, divisions, and tensions amongst its members over the management of this aggression against Gaza and the captives exchange deal that is being negotiated. In the last session, there was a rebuke from Netanyahu to ministers in Likud who did not oppose Hamas's terms for the exchange deal. Netanyahu's government is on its way to disintegration. If a deal is concluded for the exchange of the captives with the resistance, Ben-Gvir and Smotrich will withdraw from it. And if it is not concluded, Gantz and Eisenkot will withdraw from it. In both cases, the administration will disintegrate. I mean, according to the Zionist analyst, if the exchange deal is concluded or not, the Netanyahu administration is on the path to disintegration. Opinion polls say that 55% of Israelis want to go to early elections.
In fact, demanding early elections is what Netanyahu fears the most. And everything he does in security and politics is in order to avoid this scenario. But the administration's structure may impose on him what he does not want and what is not in his interest. Here, I would like to refer to the significant point which was mentioned a moment ago. These early captives have become hostages of Israeli policy and the internal disputes within the administration. This is because it is not in Netanyahu's interest to push for this deal and put it on the negotiating table with his administration members. This will fire up the situation between the 2 parties. Therefore, we can say that Netanyahu is keen not to appear as someone who is opposed to the deal, but rather wants the opposition to come from the ministers, whether from his party or from outside his party, so that he is not facing the captives' families. This has greatly affected his public standing in this field.
And the occupation's decision to launch an attack on Rafah. The Hebrew media have revealed the plan of the occupation army for the attack, starting with the evacuation of the displaced either to the northern Gaza Strip or to Khan Yunis. The matter is related to negotiations for the captives' exchange deal. The decision to attack Rafah was taken around 2 weeks ago, and the occupation army is waiting for this political decision to be taken and the Egyptians fear large displacement operations to its lands. Mr. Ali Haider, the decision to attack Rafah was taken 2 weeks ago, and the Egyptians do not oppose, but they only fear the displacement problems. What do you think?
Unfortunately, the conditions of some Arab countries have become such that the root of the Israeli attack on the Palestinians is not revealed or exposed, but rather it is reflected on them in a direct sense. And this is unfortunate. This is what dares the Israelis to commit massacres and launch attacks. Regarding this area, however, it is possible to talk about more than one point. The Rafah issue is no longer a field issue par excellence, but it has become an interactive issue that is overlapping and interacting with two other problems, which are the issue of negotiations over the captives and the issue of tensions within the administration. Given that the issue of field pressure through Rafah is the political goal of its timing now, it is linked to the captives' negotiations to pressure Hamas to make a concession. Therefore, the more negotiations falter from the Israeli and even American perspective, the more pressure will be needed through Rafah. It seems that there is an indication of a solution if we might seek some kind of freeze in the field to one degree or another in this area. Therefore, we are facing an issue that has become more complex due to its interactions with other issues. This is in addition to the American position, which has become clear that it is not against the operation, and rather we need a different plan in one sense, and also regarding the Egyptians' concerns. We're facing a multidimensional event intertwined with more than one local and regional aspect.
I mean, it is very complicated. The recent contact between President Biden and the head of the Zionist regime, Netanyahu, regarding the attack on Rafah and the captives' exchange deal, these issues caught the attention of the Israeli media, which have detailed some of what was revealed. Mr. Ali Haider, did Netanyahu obtain Biden's approval regarding the attack on Rafah?
First, there was certainly no serious American opposition. Second, there was perhaps a disagreement about some details, not the origin of the Israeli attack. Third, this position is not denied by the United States, but rather it has become public that we're not against the military operation in Rafah, but rather we need a reliable parallel plan, in a sense, to protect, as they say, the civilians. It has become clear to everyone that protecting civilians means more casualties. This American hypocrisy is therefore a matter of tension. These are provocative expressions with which they want to fool the Arab world and Arab public opinion. Unfortunately, I think more than 30,000 martyrs and more than 60,000 wounded should be enough to expose this hypocrisy. However, we do not actually need these numbers in order to know the truth.
Professor Ali Haider, specialist in Israeli affairs, thank you very much for your participation in this episode of Israel Watch, and thank you for your good follow-up. Take care.
Today's special.
Assalamu alaikum.
It's special for you. We present to you today. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of Allah, the Most Compassionate, the Most Merciful. Dear listeners, Salamun Alaikum and welcome to this new episode of today's special from IRIB English Radio under the title of Specialty of the Month of Ramadan.
Love is everywhere, so much peace fills up the air. Ramadan, month of the Quran, I feel it inside me, strengthening my iman. But how I wish you'd be here with me all year around. Ramadan, 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 ya Habib. Ramadan, Ramadan,
Today, Wednesday, the 2nd of Ramadan, 1445, of the Islamic Lunar Retreat Calendar, corresponding to the 23rd of Isfand, 1402, of the Islamic Solar Retreat Calendar, and the 13th of March, 2024, of the Christian Gregorian Calendar. In this part, we'll listen to Chapter Al Imran, verse 173.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم الذين قال لهم الناس إن الناس قد جمعوا لكم فاخشوهم فزادهم إيمانا وقالوا حسبنا الله ونعم الوكيل.
Those to whom hypocrites said, "Indeed, the people have gathered against you, so fear them." But it merely increased them in faith, and they said, "Sufficient for us is Allah, and He is the best disposer of affairs."
لا إله إلا الله لا إله إلا الله.
Bless your day with contemplation on the verses of the Holy Quran.
The enemy propagating agents and some simple-minded and coward people advisingly inspire that the group of enemies strong and none can combat them, so it's a better not to entangle yourself with fight, the true believers without any fear, and as they are qualified in the verse, calmly answered them. So the strongest barrier against all the threats of the enemy's faith and trusting in Allah. When a believer happens to be inflicted with disasters, he increases his reliance with Allah.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim.
The dua for the second day of the month of Ramadan.
Allahumma qarribni fihi ila mardati. وَجَنِّبْنِي فِيهِ مِنْ سَخَطِكَ وَنَقِمَاتِكَ وَوَفِّقْنِي فِيهِ لِقِرَاءَةِ آيَاتِكَ بِرَحْمَتِكَ يَا أَرْحَمَ الرَّاحِمِينَ.
O Lord, bring me closer in it to your pleasure. Enable me in it to avoid your anger and wrath. Enable me to be in it to recite your verses with your mercy, O most merciful of those who have mercy.
Shukran ya Rabbi, shukran.
شكراً يا ربي شكراً هديت قلبي شكراً نورت دربي شكراً شكراً يا ربي يا منزل القرآن يا خالق الإنسان يا ربي يا رحمن شكراً يا.
One question is here, why the month of Ramadan is so important? Ramadan's sustained fast does not aim to deliver hunger, thirst, and sensual deprivation to its fasters. Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him and his pure progeny, said, "It may be that the faster gets nothing but thirst and hunger from his fast, and it may be that one who prays the night long gets from it only sleeplessness. God gave us the Ramadan fast as a mechanism to galvanize that life force. It burns away worldly obstruction, diversion, and indulgence so we can recenter our lives and focus our minds on our first order existence. To breathe with the remembrance of Allah again, to to lift up the praises of the One who created us, blesses us, eases our moral guidance, and keeps us grounded in belief in a more or less continuously mindful worship.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Dear brothers and sisters, dear listeners, we are trying to talk about the uniqueness of the blessed month of Ramadan. That is the exclusive characteristics of the blessed month of Ramadan. This is Ali, your host, and we are going to talk about this important point today. The month of Ramadan has important features that are the roots of its great blessings and the foundation of its countless bounties, the grandeur, greatness, and material and spiritual blessings that the faithful receive from this month are indescribable from the perspective of Islamic traditions. If Muslims had a proper understanding of the blessings of the virtuous month and knew its great bounties and achievements, they would wish that the entire year was Ramadan. The Prophet of Allah sallallahu alaihi wasallam said in this regard, لَوْ يَعْلَمُ الْعِبَادُ مَا فِي رَمَضَانَ لَتَمَنَّتْ أَن يَكُونَ رَمَضَانَ السَّنَةَ. If the servants knew what is in Ramadan, they would wish that Ramadan was a year. Among the many features that this month possesses, we will briefly mention a few due to their importance. The first, the month of Ramadan is also the beginning of the human year from the perspective of Islam. Because in this blessed month, the spiritual life of those on the path of spiritual wayfaring is renewed, and those who are on the path of movement towards absolute perfection become spiritually blossomed and ready to meet Allah. Therefore, it can be said that the spring that marks the beginning of the renewal of physical life for plants in the natural world and the month of Ramadan marks the beginning of the renewal of the spiritual life of humans in the realm of humanity. Second is the availability of grounds and capacities that have been prepared for the banquet of the sublime God. As the Prophet of Allah sallallahu alaihi wasallam described in mentioning this feature, it is the month in which you have been invited to the banquet of Allah and honored as guests, wherein your breaths are counted as celebrating Allah's glory, your sleep as worship, and your deeds as accepted, and your supplications as answered. In fact, this feature is the root of the first feature and the source of all features and blessings of this blessed month.
In the holy month of Ramadan, the month of Allah.
Be with IRIB English Radio, today's special.
Every day for 15 minutes.
This is today's special from IRIB English Radio and the fruits of fasting for the servants of Allah. The month of Ramadan has come. Muslims all over the world are fasting from dawn until sunset. The philosophy of the fast is well known. It gives the servants of Allah a training in discipline, self-control, unquestioned obedience to Allah. It cultivates self-denial in men so that he may be able to understand the problems facing the community and society. Islam is a religion, compact and well-balanced. It is not just a collection of some ideologies and traditions. There is a good reason behind every enjoyment, every tenet, and every precept. During Ramadan, Muslims abstain from eating and drinking, but it is only the external part of the fast. The soul and spirit of fast is something deeper. Self-restraint, piety, sympathy, and purity of soul, these are the fruits of fasting. Let us strive to achieve as much benefit as we can from this holy month of Allah.
أرجو رضاك يا الله أنت الرحيم يا الله هبني عطاك يا الله أنت الكريم منك العطاء يا الله أنت العظيم يا فيك الرجاء يا الله أنت الحليم
الرحمن الستار ملك الملك الغفار الوهاب المنان المتعال
الرحمن الستار ملك الملك الغفار الوهاب المنان المتعال
الله الله يا ربي يا الله
Recommended du'as for the month of Ramadan. Du'a for the nights of Ramadan and for all occasions.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Allahumma adkhil 'ala ahlil qubur as-surur.
One of the etiquettes of du'a is to ask for others, to remember those who are in need. It is a selfless act, displaying humanity and consideration for others. Allah loves a person who first asks for others, then prays for himself. Our sixth Imam, Imam Ja'far as-Sadiq, says, "When a Muslim prays for his brother, increase in sustenance is given to him, afflictions are driven away, and the angels tell him, you will also receive the same." Many people all over the world suffer indescribable miseries. Tyranny and oppression are rampant in many countries. There is little we can do to alleviate the suffering. However, we can at least pray sincerely for them, hoping that Allah will relieve them as He has power over all things. We also pray that Allah may give us the will and the ability to help others in whatever way we can. This dua starts like this. Allahumma adkhil ala ahli al-qubur as-surur.
One of the blessings of the blessed month of Ramadan is divine forgiveness, which encompasses the servants. Imam al-Baqir alayhi salam said, "When the month of Ramadan arrived and drew near, the Messenger of Allah sallallahu alayhi wasallam would command Bilal to inform the people 3 days before the end of Sha'ban, and everyone would gather in the mosque. He would then ascend the pulpit, praise the glory of Allah, and say, 'Ayyuhan nas, O people, verily this month has come, and it is the chief and leader of the other months. There is a night in it that is better than 1,000 months. And this month, the gates of hell are closed, and the gates of paradise are opened.'" The fourth feature that we are going to talk about is the month of Ramadan has been called month of emancipation, because Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has 600 freed servants every day and night, and at the end of the month, as many as He has freed in the past, that is, the past days and nights. There was a narration from Imam Abu Ja'far as-Sadiq, who said, "This is a month whose beginning is mercy, its middle is forgiveness, and its end is the acceptance of supplication and deliverance from the hellfire." Thank you very much, dear brothers and sisters, for staying tuned. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Thank you very much for listening to this episode of today's special, and fi amanillah.
Subhanaka Rabbi, subhanak, subhanaka ma a'zama shanak, nad'uka wa narju ghufranak, nad'uka wa narju ghufranaka Rabbi.
IRIB English Radio.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.